Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.
FMR's Not the Daily News on Classic Business is brought to you by 10X, an asset manager that delivers superior returns and an authority on wealth creation. 10X your future. Now, what we've seen is trillions of dollars pouring into environmental, social and governance funds in recent years. In 2021 alone, the figure grew by $8 billion a day, according to Bloomberg Intelligence, and it projects that more than one third of all globally managed assets could carry explicit ESG labels by 2025. So that's just around the corner, and that makes it a market that will amount to more than $50 trillion. Now, the implicit promise of ESG investing is that you can do well and do good at the same time. And I'm joined now by Anton Esser, who's the Chief Investment Officer of 10X. We're talking about ESG investing and the financing of South Africa's energy transition. So there's an opportunity in all of this. Anton, welcome. Firstly, what is ESG? How do you define it?
Hi, Michael. Good evening. Yeah. So, yeah, just you kind of touched on it, but just for your listeners. So E is environmental. So climate change, carbon emissions, natural resource use, pollution and waste. The S is for social. So workforce, you know, how your workforce is managed, customer and product responsibility. And then the third one, governance, just around shareholder rights and board effectiveness, compensation, et cetera. And really what it means, from an investment perspective is assessing a company that you're investing in, or in fact, you know, maybe a project, for example, on those what we call non-financial factors, ESG.
Now, it's really evolved, and this is where we are currently, but it wasn't always like this. How did we get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, back in when I started my career, we didn't have ESG, so it is a long time ago, but it really, back then you had two types of mandates. One would be an ethical mandate, so kind of investing in ethical industries, or separately, kind of similar, a mandate which you manage where you had exclusions, you know, so don't invest in tobacco companies or gambling companies, etc. And that was the world pre-ESG. ESG came along, I think it was around 2006, 2007, was the first time it was coined. And really back then, it was just really considered a kind of a risk mitigation tool. Have you assessed this company and factored in these risks? And if you kind of, you know, cast your mind back to the VW emissions scandal, remember Dieselgate, which happened in the middle of the last decade. That was obviously a massive failure in governance, clearly a massive failure in terms of factoring environmental factors, et cetera. And ESG really became a super hot topic kind of, you know, back then. So you're only talking, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when ESG kind of became a known thing in kind of investment community. But it's moved a long way from that. You kind of mentioned the stats there. It's gone from being, you know, very small to, you know, depending on how you define it, something like 40% of global assets under management, grown at 20% per annum in the last 5 years. And it's gone from really being something which is a risk mitigation tool into something which is absolutely much more clearly defined in investment mandates. And we'll kind of talk a little bit about what that means. But yeah, broadly speaking, Michael, that's where we've come from.
Yeah, and as the taxonomy, so to speak, evolves, as we have some shared understanding of what it means to fit into the E bucket, for example, I think it's quite easily defined. You know, what are your carbon emissions, scope 1, 2, and 3? What's your water footprinting? It has been a little bit more difficult, I think, to define the social aspects and potential negative consequences of actions. And governance, I think, is fairly well defined. But my point here is that many are rather cynical about ESG and say, no, it's just a marketing tool. And you can slap any label on the tin, and tomorrow, if you want to change it, all of a sudden, selling missiles to the Ukraine becomes an ESG investment. I mean, what is your view on whether or not this is a legitimate thematic driver in the markets, or whether it's just a big marketing tool?
Well, it's a bit of both with all these things. So, I mean, I think you know, taking the slightly more cynical end of things in terms of it being a massive marketing tool, I think there's some, you know, genuine kind of credit, you know, kind of merit in that argument. But at the same time, even if you take that cynical view, and let's say you take, you know, what BlackRock announced a few years ago in terms of the way they were looking for companies to disclose and looking for companies to, you know, manage for multiple stakeholders, et cetera, and you kind of went, well, that's just really marketing. True. But in reality, if you actually look at what a lot of global corporates have had to do by virtue of those shareholders putting pressure on them in terms of emissions disclosure, you know, pay within the company, you know, splitting of the chair and the CEO, they've actually had to respond. So even though maybe initially they came from a little, you know, from the cynical view, from something which was box ticking, you've actually led, it's actually led to a lot of change and a lot of companies, you know, committing to net zero in 2050. So there actually has been change, even in that kind of mass end of the market. But what's more important is where this goes and where we're going right now. Mm-hmm. And that is ultimately around, you know, truly measuring and understanding impact. And if you take the view that, that in the next, you know, couple of decades, what we'll be thinking about from an investment perspective is absolutely, you know, how do we create a sustainable company, and the impact that company has, both on the environment, on, you know, social factors, et cetera, is going to actually be the determinant of the successful companies in the future. So there's a cynical view, but there's actually a much more real, almost financial view that, you know, you can't invest in a company which is not sustainable, and not integrating these factors into the way you run your company is not a sustainable company. So that's kind of a different perspective on it.
Yeah, it's business risk. I mean, yes, there is greenwashing that goes on in the market, and as a journalist, one is naturally cynical, but there is the deeper understanding of what is the business risk here. If you're a corporate that understands, for example, the likelihood of increased flooding and storm activity down in Durban, what is that going to do to the cost of insurance? Will you be able to get insurance in the future? Should we be building in certain areas below a flood line? How do we strengthen the infrastructure to withstand a changing climate? These are business risks. These are real, tangible things. I was chatting to the CEO of Meta earlier on the show today. And, you know, he said in some areas it's going to be potentially a lot more difficult to get insurance. So it goes beyond just the marketing and the greenwashing. Yeah. How do you see the participation in the market at the moment? Are you seeing a lot of appetite from institutions, or is it more something driven by retail investors? And I'm thinking here particularly more like the millennial, who seem to be a lot more socially conscious and aware of these kinds of things.
Well, originally it was, you know, primarily institutional investors. So, you know, pension funds, where, you know, a lot of regulatory pressure to incorporate ESG into their investment policies. And so a lot of initial drive was pretty much all institutional. But yeah, in the last few years, you've seen a big pickup in participation in the retail market. I'm talking much more, you know, within Europe, for example, to a lesser extent the US. But in Europe, you know, if you look at the flows into, you know, the equivalents of unit trusts over there, a lot of the flows have been into ESG related products, and that is obviously therefore coming largely from retail. So, you know, it's what was predominantly institutional is now, you know, pretty evenly split in terms of flows across institutional and retail. And this is very much in the European and North American markets.
This is Not the Daily News, sponsored by 10X, an asset manager that provides a selection of investment solutions that deliver superior returns, is an authority on wealth creation. Just 10X your future. And I've got Anton Esser, Chief Investment Officer of 10X, on the line. We're talking about ESG investing. And Anton, the financing of South Africa's energy transition presents an opportunity, doesn't it? What role can it play here in South Africa?
So I think, you know, South Africa is like a hugely important part of where we're going. Because in the end, if you think about carbon emissions in the next 30 years, all of it's going to be coming from emerging markets. So Africa in particular, but China, India, et cetera, it's actually, if you look at kind of developed markets, you know, energy consumption or in terms of climate emissions is actually, you know, kind of plateauing. So the major area is actually emerging markets. And emerging markets has a very different set of challenges compared to developed markets, although we're seeing a lot more of those challenges kind of picking up in Europe in terms of energy access, but it's very much an emerging market problem whereby, you know, we don't have the luxury to think necessarily around carbon emissions. We want to turn the lights on. So it is as much a social element of the ESG as it is the E element of ESG. And South Africa in so many ways represents exactly that problem. If we can solve it in South Africa, we can solve it across multiple emerging markets. So our particular challenge is something which, you know, the global community is watching, you know, very closely, hence that recent $8.5 billion worth of funding that we've received. And if you look at the South African context and you look at the problems that we're trying to solve and you look at what we're living through in terms of Eskom and what we need to create in terms of energy production in the next 10 years to ultimately, you know, create a stable economy, we're looking at something around 3 to 4 gigawatts worth of additional power we need to bring into the system. And that power, if invested in renewable energy, will ultimately lead to a massive reduction on our coal dependency in the next 10 years. And if you look at those numbers, that's, you know, ballpark 400 billion rand, okay, which is a big number. But if you look at, for example, Medupi and Kusile, in terms of the costs, it's cost over 400 billion rand since we began the process of constructing those coal plants. So, you know, it's actually what we've spent in the last few years looking out for the next 10 years. So the number is big, but it's financeable. Yeah. So if we're able to ultimately mobilize local capital alongside foreign capital, it's a very, very fundable opportunity and a great investment opportunity looking forward.
I mean, if you just look at that as potential catalysts from a number of perspectives, unlocking the energy constraint, yeah, unblocking that bottleneck in the economy is one. Two is obviously the investment in the physical infrastructure, and the banks are now going to be lending and the investors are going to be investing into that space. The figure you've put, 400 billion, I was chatting to Anton Eberhard, he reckons over the next decade, 1.2 trillion if we are to stay ahead of the deficit and continually roll out 4 to 5 gigawatts every year annually in renewables, which is what we need to do. The jobs that are created upstream and downstream, it is a massive opportunity. And to your point about the Just Energy Transition Package, Daniel Manele is working hard behind the scenes to ensure that we can become the global poster child for this energy transition, because there are other emerging markets. I think you have Poland and Vietnam and others out there who are going through similar challenges. So as much as we're in the midst of stage 4 load shedding at the moment, Anton, what I love about the conversation is it's forward looking and saying, right, these are the challenges, these are the problems, but we're facing this at a very unique time as a country where we can demonstrate to the world that this is a blueprint for other countries to do it. Just finally, though, what do you see as the big challenge here in South Africa? Because clearly there are vested interests. You look at the coal mining industry. Truckers are probably not going to be trucking much more coal if you're building wind power up in Mpumalanga. You've got to bring them along with you. And so for me, I think the economics stack up. I worry a little bit about the politics. I think we haven't quite overcome the political challenges to the transition.
No, we haven't. I mean, that is the biggest challenge. I mean, as you say, we're right now in a situation where the economics completely stack up. And actually the job creation, you know, we're looking at, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs which can be created in the next 10 years. So I think, you know, it's gradually happening, but if we can shift it to that narrative, then it's going to be massively positive.
That was Anton Esser, Chief Investment Officer of 10X, talking about ESG investing and, importantly for us here in South Africa, the financing of our energy transition. FMR's Not the Daily News on Classic Business is brought to you by 10X Investments, an asset manager that provides investment solutions that deliver superior returns. 10X your future. Listen to Not the Daily News on FMR's Classic Business next Thursday, just after 6:40 p.m. 10X, an industry thought leader and expert. To 10X your future, visit www.10x.co.za.
Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.